ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय से द्वारे अच्छन्दाले कीर्तन संसारे नाम प्रेम मालगंत पाइला संसारे Thus he spread kirtan even among the untouchables. He wove a wreath of the holy name and prema with which he garlanded the entire universe. Please repeat. Thus he spread kirtan even among the untouchables. He wove a wreath of the holy name and prema with which he garlanded the entire material world. Emata bhakta bhava kori angikar apani achati kori la prachar. In this way, assuming the sentiment of a devotee, he preached devotional service while practicing it himself. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Rupa Goswami met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag, Allahabad, he offered his respectful obeisances by submitting that Lord Chaitanya was more magnanimous than any other avatar of Krishna, because he was distributing love of Krishna. His mission was to enhance love of Godhead. In the human form of life, the highest achievement is to attain the platform of love of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya did not invent a system of religion, as people sometimes assume. Religious systems are meant to show the existence of God, who is then generally approached as the cosmic order supplier. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's transcendental mission is to distribute love of God to everyone. Anyone who accepts God as the supreme can take to the process of chanting Hare Krishna and become a lover of God. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is the most magnanimous. This munificent broadcasting of devotional service is only possible for Krishna himself. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has taught the philosophy of surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who has surrendered to the Supreme can make further progress by learning to love Him. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement, propagated by Lord Chaitanya, is especially meant for those who are cognizant of the presence of the Supreme Godhead, the ultimate controller of everything. His mission is to teach people how to dovetail themselves into engagements of transcendental loving service. He is Krishna, teaching his own service from the position of a devotee. The Lord's acceptance of the role of a devotee in the eternal form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is another of the Lord's wonderful features. A conditioned soul cannot reach the absolute personality of Godhead by his imperfect endeavor. And therefore it is wonderful that Lord Sri Krishna, in the form of Lord Gauranga, has made it easy for everyone to approach him. Swarup Damodar Goswami has described Lord Chaitanya as Krishna himself with the attitude of Radharani, or a combination of Radha and Krishna. The intention of Lord Chaitanya is to taste Krishna's sweetness in transcendental love. He does not care to think of himself as Krishna because he wants the position of Radharani. We should remember this. A class of so-called devotees called the Nadia Nagaris or Gaur Nagaris pretend that they have the sentiment of gopis toward Lord Chaitanya. But they do not realize that he placed himself not as the enjoyer, Krishna, but as the enjoyed, the devotee of Krishna. The concoctions of unauthorized persons pretending to be bona fide have not been accepted by Lord Chaitanya. Preparations such as those of the Gaur Nagaris are only disturbances to the sincere execution of the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is undoubtedly Krishna himself, and he is always non-different from Srimati Radharani. But the emotion technically called Vipralamba Bhava, which the Lord adopted for confidential reasons, should not be disturbed in the name of service. A mundaner should not unnecessarily intrude into affairs of transcendence and thereby displease the Lord. One must always be on guard against this sort of devotional anomaly. A devotee is not meant to create disturbances to Krishna. As Srila Rupa Goswami has explained, devotional service is anukulyena, or favorable to Krishna. Acting unfavorably toward Krishna is not devotion. Kamsa was the enemy of Krishna. He always thought of Krishna, but he thought of him as an enemy. One should always avoid such unfavorable so-called service. Lord Chaitanya has accepted the role of Radharani, and we should support that position, as Swarup Damodar did in the Gambhira, the room where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed in Puri. He always reminded Lord Chaitanya of Radha's feelings of separation, and as they are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya appreciated his assistance. But the Gaur Nagaris, who placed Lord Chaitanya in a position of enjoyer and themselves as the enjoyed, are not approved by Lord Chaitanya or Lord Chaitanya's followers. Instead of being blessed, the foolish imitators are left completely apart. Their concoctions are against the principles of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The doctrine of transcendental enjoyment by Krishna cannot be mixed up with the doctrine of transcendental feeling of separation from Krishna in the role of Radharani. Herein, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami reveals to the world the magnanimous, merciful mission of Lord Chaitanya. How he wove a wreath or a garland of the holy name and prema and placed it around the entire world. How? By spreading kirtan even among the untouchables. Srila Prabhupada explains how when Krishna appeared in this world, he revealed the transcendental pastimes of the spiritual world. Krishna appears only once in a day of Brahma. This means he appears, manifests his lila for about 125 years. One time every 4,320,000,000 years. In every yuga, the Lord appears as Yugavatar. Four yugas equal, four yugas combined is a Divya Yuga. 71 Divya Yugas are within one Manvantar. Manvantar is one of the great Manus who rule over during that time. There are 14 Manvantars in a day of Brahma, equaling approximately 4,320,000,000 years. It is only on this rare occasion that Krishna personally appears, descending from Goloka, to reveal his transcendental pastimes of Vrindavan. During the time of the Vaivashvat Manu, approximately the 28th Divya Yuga, and during this time only, the same Divya Yuga that Krishna appears in the end of Dwapara Yuga, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appears in the beginning of the age of Kali. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. As described in this verse, he assumes the sentiment of a devotee and preaches Krishna consciousness by practicing it himself. In the seventh canto of Bhagavat, Prahlad Maharaj describes Lord Chaitanya as the Channa avatar, hidden avatar. Although he is God himself, he appears as his own devotee. Srila Prabhupada explains the principle in such simple language. Just like a teacher teaches the classmates how to systematically learn to write the letters of alphabet correctly. Now, although the teacher is going through all the lessons, the teacher already knows everything, just doing it as an example for others. Krishna already had spoken Bhagavad Gita. Everything that is required to be known is within Bhagavad Gita. And the postgraduate study of Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Krishna performs his lila as the very culmination of the 10th canto, was already there, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva just at the beginning of the age of Kali. So yes, Krishna's lila is there, Krishna's instructions are there, but Kali Yuga is so powerful that although everything required has been given to humanity to attain the perfection of life, people cannot take it seriously. They cannot understand it. They misinterpret it. And worse than misinterpreting it, but they plunder the teachings of Gita and through their own motivation interpret it in such ways to lead people to follow their misconceptions. That is Kali Yuga. What is religion is taken to be irreligion, and what is irreligion is taken to be religion. Actually, we find that in so many religions of the world. So many powerful, learned, charismatic people, sometimes they even have powers, then they interpret scripture according to their own speculation or according to their own motivation and lead not only thousands but sometimes millions of people away from true dharma. How rampant this is in India. Recently I was speaking to a very respectable person, and he told me, very learned, very respectable, very pious, when he was hearing this idea of God as a person, it was quite thrilling to him, but so foreign. Born and raised in India. Explained from his birth. He was taught by a particular teacher that the four Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, are bona fide. All Puranas, Mahabharata, they're all bogus. They're all nonsense. They're all just fictional stories that just delude people. So you should only study four Vedas. Now, who can understand the four Vedas? It's a good strategy. That means you have to understand four Vedas according to his conception, because nobody can read and understand the four Vedas. Any confusing. Vedavyas knew this. That's why he wrote the Puranas and the Mahabharata, so we can understand what the Vedas are really saying through factual historical references. And therefore, is explaining, since birth, the conception has always been that everything with form, everything with personality, everything with variety is just the illusions of this world, and beyond that there is only the impersonal, formless Brahman. That's the only reality. But after hearing about the personality of Godhead, so much logic, so much philosophy to support it, it made so much sense. But so much against the very root of all religious conditionings. He said, is there any possibility of a person who is born and raised to only conceive of the Absolute as impersonal to ever attain love? Is it possible? He said, yes. We just have to associate with people who strive for love and hear about the Lord's wonderful transcendental teachings, qualities, and leelas from those persons. Because love of God, prema, is dormant within every heart of every living being. It is our nature. Our nature is not just to be invisible, formless existence. That is not our constitutional position. Jivera swarupoi krishnera nityadas prema pumartha mahan. Our constitutional position is to serve the Lord. Therefore, the ultimate goal of life is to love the Lord. But we see in the age of Kali how vast, vast segments of the population have no conception of the beautiful, all-attractive, all-loving qualities of Godhead. That is the age of Kali. And even someone who barely strives for the impersonal Brahman is very rare in the age of Kali. Most people are simply addicted to sophisticated or unsophisticated animalistic sense gratification. What is the difference between sophisticated and unsophisticated? Unsophisticated are people who really just allow their passion and their ignorance to just overrule without trying to create a veneer of being nice. Yes? Some people, literally, they are just more horrible in their behavior than any animal. But those who are a little more in the mode of goodness, or going toward the mode of goodness, they have the same animalistic passions that drive them in life, but they try to do it with a little more morality, or at least a little more appearance of morality. Very sophisticated. Actually, if you take a hog and put him in a tuxedo or a beautiful wedding gown, female hog in a wedding gown, or a male hog in a three-piece suit and tie and top hat, they're still going to eat stool. Yes? Nayam deho deha bhajam naloke. That sense gratification is like stool. So however we dress up people, whatever names and titles we give each other, still people are so much immersed in sense gratification. In previous ages, materialistic people, karmis, they actually believed in the next life, and therefore they engaged in sense gratification in such a way by performing of yajnas that they would attain the higher planets, swarga loka. Then they could really enjoy incredible sense gratification. Somaras, apsaras, very nice. But today, nobody even believes in the heavenly planets. They just want it now. Very well. So that is the age of Kali. Yes, Krishna told us everything needed to be known in Bhagavad Gita and Veda Vyas revealed the spiritual world to us in Srimad Bhagavatam. But Krishna is merciful. He sees in the age of Kali the vast majority of the population cannot understand. It's all there, but they can't conceive of it. Therefore, the Lord appears in the role of a devotee to teach us by practicing it himself. That is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the age of Kali Yuga, people have become so cheap in their mentality that even so-called great scholars and big, big yogis and sadhus and religious heads, they declare to people that I am God. And just so you don't feel so bad about that, you're also God. The difference is I am God who has incarnated in this world in a perfect state just to show you the way how to merge into me and become me. Then we become one. You're also God. I'm God. We're all God. Don't you want to become like me? Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually accepted initiation in Madhva Sampradaya, especially because of the strong refutation by Sripad Madhvacharya of these misconceptions that the living entity can ever become God. Now, this is the difference. In the material world, people who are just infinitesimal part and parcels who can never be God are trying to become God,
And God comes to the world saying, I'm not God. Hare Krishna.
Just to teach us. This is the opulence of renunciation. To be the supreme enjoyer, to be the ultimate worshipable object of every living entity, and anyone who would call him Vishnu, he would hold his ears, and desperately cry out, no, no, Vishnu, 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 the living entity can never, ever, ever become God. Do not contaminate my heart and my mind by saying these things. We're always the servant of the Lord. That's renunciation. People like to be glorified, yes, in this world. When you like to be glorified, really what that means is you want the position of God in one way or another. Because God is the supremely glorified. But God comes to this world and accepts the role of a very simple, obedient servant just to teach us what we should be. Try, really, in your heart of hearts, try to fathom and understand what kind of magnanimous compassion that is. The supreme controller of all controllers, the ultimate object of everyone's love, descends from the spiritual world, denies the fact that he's God, and becomes a humble servant of even ordinary human beings, just to teach us by his example the only possible way in which we can approach him. Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvishenam. Srila Prabhupada explains, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes in the role of a devotee, it's not just any devotee. He comes in the role of Srimati Radharani, the supreme devotee, the Ladini Shakti, the pleasure potency. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains the three internal and three external reasons why the Lord appeared. Perhaps we will discuss this tomorrow. The internal reasons was he wanted to understand the nature of Srimati Radharani's love. There is the Vishai and the Ashrai. Krishna's Vishai. He is the object of love. And Srimati Radharani is the possessor of love. She's the abode of love. Krishna is thinking in his heart that I am the reservoir of all pleasure. But when I see the ecstasies of my pleasure potency, Sri Radha, I understand that her pleasure is tens of millions of times greater than me. The pleasure of loving me is something so deep. I want to understand, what is the nature of that love? What is the happiness she feels when she sees me? Krishna was standing before a jeweled pillar, and he saw a reflection of himself. And actually, he was charmed upon seeing the reflection of himself, because his form was all attractive. And Krishna's thinking how much he was enjoying seeing the reflection of himself. But what is it that Srimati Radharani sees? I'm seeing, but when she sees, she's beside herself in transcendental ecstasies. Just by thinking of me, when she sees tamal tree, she just goes mad in love and begins to embrace the tamal tree simply because it has a similar complexion as my own. When the breeze carries just a slight hint of the fragrance of my body, Sri Radharani Prak, she jumps into the air trying to merge into the breeze. So yes, Lord Chaitanya wanted to understand the happiness Sri Radharani feels upon seeing him. And what is it about him that brings her such happiness? Therefore, Krishna assumes the devotional attitude and the complexion of Srimati Radharani and descends to the world. Why does he descend to the world? It was the time of the Yuga Avatar to spread the glories of Harinam Sankirtan. So the Lord merged the Yuga Avatar into his original form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to perform his merciful mission in this world. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge. The Lord promises he will come again and again and again in every age to deliver the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, and to reestablish principles of religion. And the second reason was to establish the Yuga Dharma. Kalera dosanide rajanasti heka mahanguna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sangha param vrajek. The age of Kali is an ocean of faults, but not like the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean. What to speak of across the street, the Arabian Sea. Not these little dirty oceans that we see in this world. But this is a vast ocean. The whole universe is considered an ocean. And all the planets are like islands floating on the ocean. The whole cosmic manifestation is like an ocean. Yes? And all the universes are floating on that ocean. So we're speaking about, when it says an ocean of faults, that's talking about the cosmic manifestation, that size ocean, full of faults and nothing but faults, except one benediction. And what is that benediction? That anyone can attain the supreme perfection of liberation simply by chanting the holy name. Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. Lord Chaitanya often quoted this verse. In fact, he told the sannyasis in Varanasi that his Gurudev taught him this verse and told him to never ever forget this most important verse. That in the age of Kali, there is no other way of attaining spiritual perfection save and except through the chanting of the names of Lord Hari. So Lord Chaitanya made a garland of the holy name and Krishna Prema to garland the world. Advaitacharya and the Vaishnavas, who were actually avatars of the Lord who were sent to prepare for the coming of the Lord, they saw the miserable condition of the people of Kali, not only in the present, but they could see into the future. Therefore, Advaita Prabhu, seeing the condition, understood only if Krishna, in his original form, personally comes himself, can he give these people the actual understanding of the ultimate perfection of life. Only if Krishna appears can the name of the Lord be spread all over in the age of Kali. Can you imagine the power of this age if Advaita Prabhu, who is Mahavishnu? Now you may think that you can deliver someone, but here is Mahavishnu feeling he's helpless to deliver people in the age of Kali. Hare Krishna. And Srivas Thakur is Narada Muni. And Haridas Thakur is Lord Brahma. And Sri Ram Pandit is Parvat Muni. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi is Vrishabhanu, the father of Sri Radha. These are the kinds of people who were seeing the lamentable condition of the age of Kali. And they were performing great, great sacrifices to bring the Lord down. Srivas Pandit and Sri Ram Pandit, Sri Nidhi and Sripati, they were performing kirtan practically day and night with the fixed meditation. And by chanting the holy name so sincerely, so purely, with such prayers of compassion, that Krishna would come to deliver the fallen souls. Why? They were already perfectly liberated. They were already tasting bhakti ras, the ecstasies of pure love. But they were compassionate. They could have easily found a secluded place and just remained together and did kirtan, harinam and harikata, and been blissful their whole life until they leave this world. But no. They could find no real happiness as long as other people were suffering. They had ecstatic happiness, but they couldn't really feel fulfillment until other people would feel what they were feeling. They couldn't tolerate seeing people suffer. Some people, they just want some happiness for themselves. Other people, they're just ignorant fools. Let them suffer. What can we do? But that is not these Vaishnavas' qualities. Srivas Thakur, Narada Muni, is performing kirtan practically day and night with the singular objective of chanting so full of love that Lord Krishna will come to this world to deliver the people who are blaspheming Him and neglecting Him. And Advaita Prabhu, Mahavishnu, actually, all he has to do to destroy the universe is inhale. Yes? But instead, also Lord Shiva is combined avatar of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva, the original Shiva of the spiritual world. All he has to do is dance and he can destroy everyone on earth. Yes? Sometimes he even got so emotional he said that these blasphemers, I will destroy them all immediately. But then he would remember his mission and he would cry seeing their lamentable position. And when he read from Gautamiya Tantra that if one just offers tulsi leaf and some water with devotion, Krishna will fulfill whatever desire you have. Advaita Prabhu spent not hours, not days, not months, but years, all day, every day, just offering tulsi leaves, Ganga water, and crying out in a tumultuous, roaring voice so that Krishna would hear him in Goloka, crying out for Krishna to appear with tears of compassion for all suffering souls flowing from his lotus-like eyes. Before the name Advaita Prabhu, his name was Kamalaksha because he had such beautiful lotus eyes. Filled with tears of compassionate love for all. The Lord is bound by the love of his devotee. Advaita Prabhu would say like this. He would tell the devotees, because sometimes the devotees would really become very sorrowful seeing human society the way it is. And the amazing thing is it's not the same reason that philanthropic people cry in this world. Sometimes people cry when they see poverty, when they see little children eating out of garbage cans, and they see old people without anyone to take care of them just laying in the side of the road burning in pain. Or they see people with diseases, horrible, painful, excruciating diseases, and there's no one who cares anything about them. They're just
alone, forlorn, and just rejected. Where they see people in such dire poverty, so much sufferings, or people with emotional, mental problems, and they cry. And that is proper. A compassionate person must feel the suffering of others. Paradukha dukhi. That is the quality of a civilized man or woman. That we actually feel for the sufferings of others. We don't ignore or neglect the sufferings of others. We want to do according to our capacity to help. But the Vaishnavas, they were living in Navadvip. Yes, there were old people and there was a few poor people and diseased people. But that wasn't the only people they were suffering for. There was the wealthy people, the learned scholars, who had young, healthy, vibrant bodies, so many followers, very proud, puffed up by their opulences of wealth and learning and beauty and high birth as Brahmins. They didn't look like they were suffering. They thought they were enjoying better than anyone else, and they were proud of it. The devotees were weeping and crying for them. This was Prahlad Maharaj's mood. He prayed to Lord Narasingha Dev that these foolish people, cheated of the real wealth of devotion, trying to enjoy the temporary objects of misery in this material world, I cry and lament for them. His father, Hiranyakashipu, thought he was enjoying. He was handsome, strong. However old he was young because he had this benediction that he would live practically for the lifetime of Brahma. Yes? He had all opulences, wealth, power, reputation. Everyone did what he said. He had beautiful ladies, anyone he wanted. Prahlad was crying for him and all other materialistic people who were under the illusion that they can enjoy this world. In one sense, people who are suffering are better off than people who think they're enjoying. Because at least people who are suffering, they can possibly be more receptive to transcendental knowledge. But people who are puffed up and enjoying, very difficult for them to open their hearts and submissively hear from anyone. And even if they do, they just don't, doesn't make sense. So many times in the Western world, in the colleges, you try to preach to the students. They are trying to enjoy like anything. They're young, they're beautiful, they have money, their parents are rich, they have record players and stereos and nice cars, and they're getting good education, they're going to make so much money. I spent 8 years preaching in the colleges, and these students, when you tell them the material world's a miserable place, and you start explaining all the details and logic behind it, they say, yes, that's true, but it doesn't matter, because they're enjoying. Very difficult. Nala Kuvera Manigriva, they were enjoying also. Thakur, in his previous life of Narada Muni, he saw them in such a lamentable situation. They were beautiful. They were wealthy. They were famous. They were enjoying with heavenly ladies, as many as they wanted. They were intoxicated, not with beer, but with somaras. Huh? They were really enjoying. But Narada Muni felt pity for them. His heart was breaking with for them. The only way to get through to them is he had to curse them to be trees.
Haribo.
Trees is a miserable state. After years and years and years of being a tree, then finally they can get the message and take it seriously and be receptive. They were there as trees for many years before Krishna performed his leela. then they were receptive to appreciate Krishna's Leela. So this was the third reason Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Because Advaita Prabhu, Srivas Prabhu, and Haridas Thakur was chanting 300,000 names a day, living in a cave in Fuliagram near Shantipur with the intense prayer in every name that Krishna, please come and help these people of the age of Kali by spreading the Yuga Dharma. Thus Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, who was longing to understand the only one thing that was a mystery in his life, the nature of Radharani's love, came with the sentiment of bhakti and the complexion of Sri Radhika to perform the mission of the Yuga Avatar, to give her love to the world through Hari Kirtan and the association of Vaishnavas. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that the type of mercy that Lord Chaitanya distributed during his tour of South India was far greater than that he distributed in Navadvip Dham. During Lord Chaitanya's South Indian tour, he was simply immersed in preaching. How he preached, Srila Prabhupada explains, how he preached in South India is very important to study in order for us to understand what is the mission of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Shall I speak briefly on this subject? Shamananda Prabhu? Very rare. I very much was impressed by Shamananda Prabhu's nice presentation last night. Huh? You're the one that brought the bottle. Last night we had counselor meeting. Should I tell the secret? How many people would like to know the secret? People like secrets. Last night we had a very, very important counselor meeting. And Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj, who's one of the most learned and empowered preachers in all of the world, refused to give class. Out of his humility and somewhat ill health. But he did concede to doing his Moscow temple presentation. But he said he would only begin when I came. But I was at the counselor meeting, and it was going too long. That's usually what happens at counselor meetings. So it was 8 o'clock. And Goswami Maharaj was looking in the door, waiting. And we were thinking that the devotees are sitting upstairs, so many devotees, we should start a program. So I called the brahmacharis and I said, please, one of you should go up and start speaking Gaur Katha until Goswami Maharaj and myself come up. Shamananda Prabhu said, Govinda should speak. He has a very nice lecture prepared. And Govinda Prabhu said, Gauranga should speak because he's Gauranga. And Gauranga Prabhu said, Radha Gopinath should speak because everyone likes to hear him so much. And Radha Gopinath Prabhu said, no, Shamananda Prabhu should speak. So nobody would accept. It was actually very sweet and intimate, but total disagreement amongst them. So I said, you decide amongst yourselves who's going to speak, because I have to continue this meeting. So Shamananda Prabhu, who's very, very excellent in not only preaching and devotion, but management, he understood that there was no way that they were going to decide amongst themselves. Yes? So he said, you decide. I said, no, you decide. So he brought me a bottle of Bisleri water. Hare Krishna. So we put all the devotees in a circle and we spun the bottle. And whichever way the bottle pointed to, that person would speak. Because you see, Shamananda Prabhu has a master's degree in business management and administration. So he knows how to resolve conflict. He also has studied conflict resolution. Yes? So this is a very sophisticated, high-tech, state-of-the-art way of resolving. You just take a bottle of water and spin it, and whoever it points to, that person has to surrender. Now, obviously, when he brought that bottle, he understood that there were five of them. And there was very little possibility that the bottle would point toward him. And I spun the bottle, and I was watching them as it was spinning. And then the Paramatma in the heart of every living entity, who is the controller of all controllers, just took that bottle and very precisely aimed it at Shamananda Prabhu. And four of the brahmacharis just raised their arms in joy with smiles on their faces and said, Harivo! And Shamananda Prabhu put his head down, didn't say a single word to anyone, just came upstairs and delivered such a wonderful, excellent pravachan on the glories of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Harivo. So if any of you are interested in understanding how the leading brahmacharis make decisions, it has been revealed. After Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he wanted to go to Vrindavan. But Nityananda Prabhu understood his heart. His heart is ultimately to give pleasure to his devotees. And his devotees were beside themselves in utter grief. Because after the Lord took sannyas, they were thinking they may never see him again. Sachi Mata was devastated with motherly emotion in separation. And what to speak of the pains of the hearts of the devotees, the pains that each devotee was personally feeling. For years, every day, they were with Lord Chaitanya all day and all night. They could not give up his association. His love for them was so deep. They were drowning in his love. And naturally, in their pure hearts, they were reciprocating by drowning him in their love. If someone deeply loves you, it's very difficult to live without that person's association. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his love is unlimited.
Just like when Krishna was dancing with the Braj gopis, each gopi is thinking Krishna's love is being directed exclusively to me. Now, if someone in this world loves you, it can really infatuate and overwhelm you. But that love is just a perverted reflection of the sentiments within the quantity of an atomic infinitesimal particle of Krishna. It is inconceivable to even imagine, the intelligence cannot fathom, when Krishna's unlimited, supreme, ultimate love is directed toward you. And you actually, your heart is open to access it and receive it. Simply overwhelming. Very often we speak about what is the ecstasy of loving Krishna, when the eternal divine energy of love within the heart awakens and expresses itself. That is ananda, beyond limits. But even greater than that is when Krishna reciprocates and just floods your entire existence with his unlimited love. And Krishna's love is not divided. It's not that Krishna's love is divided in percentages according to how many living entities exist who are his devotees. Yes? It's like if there's 10 trillion devotees, then Krishna's love is divided into 10 trillion compartments, one for each devotee. It is not like that. Krishna's full, inconceivable, incomprehensible love is offered to every devotee according to their particular rasa. They can experience Krishna's love, and that is why their love is ever increasing and Krishna's love for them is ever increasing. How could something that is completely full and unlimited be increasing at every moment? That is the nature of the relationship of rasa between Krishna and his devotees in the purified state. That is life in the spiritual world, where Krishna's full love is being expressed toward every living entity according to their relationship. And it's ever increasing, and our love is ever increasing. Hare Krishna. Now, who wants to merge into the impersonal Brahman when that world of prema is waiting for us? What to speak of who wants to remain, you know, watching television and eating potato chips in this material world, when that love is waiting for us? So, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left the devotees, after enjoying day and night with them, performing wonderful pastimes, it was unbearable. It was absolutely unbearable. The hearts of every devotee was just devastated. But there was an experience worse than that. Who knows what that was? Can anyone say? What tortured the devotees even worse than the pangs of separation in their heart was to see Sachimata's pangs of separation. She was the widowed mother who had no one else in her whole life.
When the devotees saw her anguish, it multiplied their own anguish by millions of times. So Lord Chaitanya, he took sannyas, etam shashtaya paratmanishtam. He was just in the mood of the Avanti Brahman, just ecstatic. I've given up all the things of this world. I'm following in the footsteps of the previous histories of great souls, and I'm going to Vrindavan to by following the footsteps of these great souls, I will cross over the unlimited ocean of material suffering and attain the lotus feet of Mukunda. Let us go to Vrindavan. So he was in such an intoxicated state. But Nityananda Prabhu understood that actually, in his heart of hearts, he wants to please his devotees. So he devised a detour in their travel plans. Some cowherd boys were singing. Lord Chaitanya was teaching them how to chant the names of Hari. And they were dancing with the Lord, these little cowherd boys. It was such a happy situation. And Nityananda Prabhu took them aside and said, when he asks you the way to the Yamuna, show him the direction of Ganga, Haribo. So when the Lord came to the Ganga, he thought it was Yamuna. He said, Nityananda Prabhu, you are so kind, you are so merciful. You have brought me to the Yamuna, to Vrindavan. And he offered his obeisances and his prayers, and he was bathing and singing beautiful songs from the scriptures, praising the merciful qualities of Yamuna Mayi. And in that ecstatic trance, on Nityananda Prabhu's arrangement, Sri Advaita Prabhu came on a boat and said, you have, with dry sets of clothes, Lord Chaitanya saw Nityananda Prabhu and became apparently disoriented. He said, Advaita Prabhu, how did you know I was here? How have you come to Yamuna, Vrindavan? Advaita Prabhu said, this is the Ganga, you're in Shantipur. Then Lord Chaitanya Lord Chaitanya said to Nityananda Prabhu, you have tricked me. You have tricked me. You have brought me here. And Advaita Prabhu, who is actually the most intimate, loving friend of Nityananda Prabhu, he defended Nityananda Prabhu. Together they would fight, but anyone else they would defend. But their fighting was love. Such deep, intimate love. Actually, Vrindavan Das Thakur explains that when two advanced devotees appear to be fighting, it is not an ordinary thing. If anybody takes side with one and goes against the other, his spiritual life will be finished. Hare Krishna. That's a serious warning. So, Advaita Prabhu said, actually, at Prayag, Ganga, Yamuna meet. From that point on, both rivers are in one. The eastern side is the Ganga, the western side is Yamuna, and you are bathing on the western side, so actually what Nityananda Prabhu is saying is correct. You are bathing in Yamuna. And besides that, you have been fasting for 3 days and you don't have any dry clothes. Here is dry clothes and I have a nice prasad for you arranged at my house. Just a few steamed vegetables and some rice. Please come. So in Shantipur, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda Prabhu enjoyed that wonderful, wonderful feast prepared by Sri Advaita Prabhu and his good wife. The next day, Sachimata came by palanquin from Navadvip along with the devotees. And Sachimata, seeing her beloved Nimai with a shaved head and the robes of sannyasi, was beside herself with grief. And Lord Chaitanya, conquered by the love of his devotees, offered his repeated obeisances to the feet of his mother. Then the crest jewel of all sannyasis, and for those of you who were at the installation of Panchatattva in Mayapur, Lord Chaitanya was about 7 feet tall. And he was very strong. He sat on the lap of Sachimata. And Sachimata was just embracing him and kissing his face again and again and again. And she was crying and he was crying. And ultimately he said to his mother, "Actually, I was like a crazy man. My body is your property. You gave me birth into this world. By your love, you sustain me through my whole life. By your example, you led me on the path of bhakti to Lord Krishna. I am your property. I owe you everything. I had no right to leave you and take sannyas. I just somehow became mad and did this. Now whatever you tell me, I will do." Sachimata's selfless love. What greater pleasure would there be for herself than to keep Lord Chaitanya home for the rest of his life? He was willing and ready. He was under the power of the love of his devotee. But Sachimata understood, if you stay home with me, people will criticize you. What is sannyasi doing living with mother all this time? Your mission is to preach Harinam. Go out, my child, and preach Harinam. But please do not go to Vrindavan. You can visit there sometime later. But make your base in Puri. Because the same Krishna that lives in Sri Brajbhumi has taken residence in Puri as Lord Jagannath, beside his brother Baladev and sister Subhadra. If you live in Puri, I will receive news about you on a regular basis. And all the devotees unanimously agreed, yes, whatever Sachimata has said is our desire. So Lord Chaitanya surrendered. I will go to Puri. But Advaita Prabhu said, no, you can go. But first stay in my house for 5 to 7 more days. Take prasad and have kirtan. The Lord said, all right, I will do. That each of the devotees were giving wonderful invitations to the Lord to take prasad, that they would cook for him. And Sachimata, very humble, very sweet in her motherly love, she expressed her desire to the devotees, that you are all his devotees. Wherever he goes, you can go to visit him and cook for him and give him prasad. But I may never see him again. He is my son. As long as he's here, please allow me to cook for him. Now, even though the devotees, it was such a deep, personal desire to cook and feed Lord Chaitanya. When they heard Sachimata's appeal, they ecstatically cried out, "Hari Hari!
Hari Hari!
Let Sachimata cook everything the Lord eats." So through the day there was Hari Hari Kata, and through the all of nights and much of the day there was Hari Kirtan. And then it was time for the Lord to depart. Advaita Prabhu and the devotees said, it is not a good time to depart. You should actually wait. Because there is much violence and danger in these provinces on the way to Puri. Especially in the Bengal. There are rival kingdoms that are having wars. And there are also areas that are infested with dacoits, thieves, and tigers. And there's no one to protect you. So just wait for some time until the dangers are less, and then it is safe for you to go. Ah, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proclaimed. He said, when will there ever be a time when there will not be obstacles on the path? I will go now. And Advaita Prabhu became ecstatic. He said, yes, my Lord, all obstacles are your servants. It's easy to read over that one sentence. But this is not just an ordinary man speaking. This is Advaitacharya. He's speaking universal knowledge, essential for the welfare of all living beings. All obstacles are your servants. That means every type of obstacle. How many obstacles are there potentially in life? There's obstacles caused by one's own mind and body. There's obstacles caused by other living beings. There's obstacles caused by natural disturbances. And within these three categories, there are unlimited obstacles that can come before our life. But Advaita Prabhu says they are all your servants. And what is the position of the servant of the Lord? To help people to become Krishna conscious. Yes? We are trying to be das, 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 anudas. To be a servant of Lord Chaitanya means to assist him in his mission. And what is his mission? To somehow or other induce people to surrender to Krishna by becoming humble, tolerant, respectful in the association of devotees and chant the holy name. Yes, sometimes people just do not treat us properly. Sometimes devotees seem to discriminate against us. Sometimes they just don't understand how sincere and hard we're really trying to do our service. Sometimes they neglect us. Sometimes they ignore us. Sometimes they criticize us. Sometimes they do politics against us. At least that's the way it appears. Or sometimes people try to beat you or kill you. Yes? Or sometimes the body, it just gets a fever. It may get terminal disease like hepatitis, AIDS, or cancer. It seems so destructive for our service. We don't know if we'll live from one day to the next. Or sometimes there's earthquakes or intense heat or freezing cold. These are obstacles. But a servant of the Lord is always eager to help with the mission of the Lord. And the mission of the Lord is to help people to turn to Krishna and take shelter of his form, his name, his words, and his devotees. So yes, all the obstacles that come in our life are Krishna's servants coming to help us to surrender. Vipada shantuta shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru. Queen Kunti had this realization, revelation. She was not a yogi living in the jungles. She was a lady living in a palace. But what incredible realizations. The greatest yogis in the jungles cannot fathom the intensity of the depth of the love and realization of Kunti Devi. A whole chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, the crest jewel of all Vedic literatures, is dedicated to her realizations. And she's praying to Krishna, let calamities come again and again and again. Who can honestly pray like that? We can say it with our mouths, and people will think, oh, very nice, you are very nice. But who really believes that that's what they want in life? Let calamities happen again and again. For Kunti, calamity means the untimely death of her eldest son at the hands of her younger son. You think mothers like to see the younger son kill the older son? That's pain. And in many ways, she loved Karna the most because she felt regretful that she didn't give Karna her love like she did the others. Haribol. Seeing her own children being banished, given poison, tried to be burned to death, so many blasphemies. Let calamities come again and again. Why? Because these obstacles are your servants, Krishna. And they all help me to always remember you. And when I remember you, I never have to see death again. Draupadi was a great devotee, but what was the highlight of her life? Everyone knows. The highlight of her life wasn't when she was made the queen of Hastinapur after the battle of Kurukshetra, sitting on her throne. The highlight of her life was when Dushasana was about to strip her naked and humiliate her worse than death before all respectable people, and nobody was there to help her. That was an obstacle. The obstacle that nobody was there to help, nobody really cared to do what she wanted them to do, difficult. The obstacle that this mighty warrior was about to strip her of her very life's integrity. But those obstacles, as the servants of Krishna, induced her to surrender wholeheartedly in a helpless state of mind, knowing no one can save me except Krishna. At the time of death, no one is there except Krishna. In that state, Draupadi raised her arms and very feelingly from her heart, she cried out the holy name. And Krishna always responds to the loving prayers of his devotees. So Advaita Prabhu said, all obstacles are the servants of you, my Lord. And we should understand whatever obstacles that are come on our path, they're actually there to help us surrender to Krishna. But we have our independent free will. We can either see it as a servant of Krishna coming to help us, or we could see it as an enemy and resist it. Yes? Actually, certain things are enemies, appearing as enemies, but even our enemies are sent by Krishna to help us. Just like the demons when they came to Vrindavan. Kaliya was a demon. Aristasura was a demon. They were enemies. But all the Brijabasis, when they were under that situation, that massive forest fire was an enemy to kill them, to consume them, and all of their society. But they all cried out for Krishna. They all turned to Krishna with grateful and pure hearts. Tate nukam pam susamiksha mano bunjana evatmikritam vibhagam. Lord Brahma has recited this prayer. The Adikavya. Who is entitled to liberation in Krishna consciousness? Only that person who endures the most difficult types of injustices and sufferings, and with folded palms thanks God for that. I deserve worse. This is just a token of the karma that I should be getting. Thank you, Krishna. And in that state, offers obeisances and helplessly cries out for mercy. Until we can do that, we cannot go back to Godhead. Now, the nature of the mind is we accept that verse. Yes, that is true. But it does not apply to this circumstance and this circumstance and this circumstance because it's just too painful. Yes? But it applies to every single circumstance. Whatever situation comes, it's Krishna's arrangement to help us to turn to Him, to surrender to Him, to give up our false ego, to give up defending ourselves and justifying our nonsense, and just say, Krishna, I'm a fallen soul. I'm the lowest of the low. But You are so merciful, and the Vaishnavas are so kind. Thank You. Thank You for allowing me to take shelter in a way that I could have never done. So yes, when Krishna's mercy comes, we have the choice of either accepting it or rejecting it. We have the choice of making excuses and justifying our ego, or we have the choice to open our hearts and say, Krishna, thank You. I deserve worse. This obstacle is actually a vehicle to propel my spiritual progress to Your lotus feet. Just like an automobile. Most people who are not mechanically inclined, they have no clue of how an automobile operates. Yes? You just go in, you turn the key, and then you just put it in gear, drive, or first gear, and then you press the pedal, and you're just driving like this. And if you have, depending on the kind of car you have, it sounds different. It's like an ambassador is like, a Mercedes is. A Ford is. Toyota is. But actually, what's really happening? What makes you go forward is this petrol or gasoline is these spark plugs, right? They're actually fire, and gasoline is creating explosions. Yes? That's what's going on in the engine. There's just constant explosions. Like... And these little explosions are causing, you know, the pistons to go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, and that's turning the axles of the wheels, and then you're going forward. Is that correct? So it's actually combustion, explosions, friction that's propelling your car forward. And the gasoline, because it's highly flammable, what happens if you put mango juice in your gas tank? Now, everyone knows mango juice is much nicer than petrol. Mango juice is sweet, especially you can put some nice... If you really want to please your engine, get mango juice and add some cardamom and some... jaggery, and maybe some saffron, and pour it in your engine, and turn it. It just it won't go anywhere. Petrol is horrible. It's poison. Yes? Petrol is poison. Drink petrol. See what happens. Don't drink petrol. It's not the order of your guru. Don't drink petrol. But just imagine drinking petrol. It's horrible. And it's highly flammable. Just like you see these big tankers on the roads, and they're carrying petrol to the Hindustani oil company or whatever. And behind those trucks and on the sides of the trucks is not a lotus flower. It's a skull and crossbones. Yes? Skull, human skull with crossbones, which are, I think, like arm bones or hip bones or thigh bones or something, or making an X around the skull. And it's poison, inflammable. Huh? Now, if you crash into a truck holding mango juice, that's it might be very nice. But you crash into a truck with petrol, everything's finished. Because petrol is dangerous. It's poison to drink, and it's flammable. People make bombs. They just take some petrol and put them in a bottle and light a piece of cloth and throw it in your window, and it burns your house down. One little bottle of petrol is so powerful. Now, why do you put petrol in your car? Because it's so flammable. Because it's so poisonous. It makes explosions. And those explosions just get things going. And that's what's going. You don't see it. You're just... But under your hood is... And you're just... Or in a Mercedes... Factually, it is combustion, it is explosions, it is friction. Why do you think you need to keep oil in your engine? Now, please know, I'm not a mechanic, but I'm just telling you these things. You put oil in your engine because the nature of this combustibility of these explosions is causing so the pistons to go this way and that way and all these different articles within the engine to just be moving so fast, there's friction. And the friction caused by the action, by the explosions of the petrol, will destroy. Therefore, you need oil. Oil keeps everything so that the friction does not destroy it. The oil keeps it so it's nice. So similarly, the obstacles that come in our path actually propel us forward. And the higher type of gasoline, the more expensive gasoline, is just gasoline that is more refined to propel you better. Yes? Just like racing cars use gasoline that really very, very highly flammable. Creates the pistons to just like that. And you're... So if we want to move forward in our spiritual life, vipada shantu tasha shva tatra tatra jagat guru, obstacles Krishna sends. Because when the obstacles come, we have two choices. We could either burn up or we could move forward. But the association of devotees is like the oil that makes everything move forward smoothly and nicely when the obstacles come. Otherwise, the obstacles cause so much friction that we just break down. Yes? The obstacles could create so much friction in our life that we just, boom, break down. But when we keep, when we welcome the obstacles with folded hands, thanking Krishna, understanding this is mercy, this is to propel me forward to the spiritual world. And we have the oil of hearing and chanting with the, in the association of devotees, then the combination just moves us forward. And the Vimana of Bhakti, back home, back to Godhead.